Branding Badass, and welcome to Season 2 of Branding Matters. My guest today is Dr. Leanne Davey, a New York Times bestselling author, Harvard Business Review contributor, and the host of the Change Your Team blog. Leanne is also the co-founder of 3C Zone Inc., a company that helps organizations make teams more effective. And some of their clients include Amazon, Walmart, Aviva, TD Bank, and Sony PlayStation, just to name a few. I invited Leanne to be a guest on my show to discuss the challenges of team building, especially during the pandemic. I wanted to know what businesses can do differently to help their team stay connected while working from home, and I was curious to get her point of view on why a healthy corporate culture is so important in developing a strong brand. Leanne, welcome to Branding Matters.
Ah, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, well, I am super excited to have you here. This is so great. And, you know, we both went to UWO, which is so funny. We found that out when we first met. What did you study at Western? And did you know what you wanted to do after you graduated?
Well, I started out thinking I wanted to go to med school, like 50% of everybody else at Western. And then I flunked calculus. And then I figured out that that wasn't going to work. So I got into psychology. And the minute that I found organizational psychology, I was completely hooked. So I did know right from the second week of second year when I found this course that I wanted to do that and wanted to go to grad school. So I was pretty clear. It was at the end of grad school where I thought I wanted to be a professor and then had a complete out of left field person, you know, say to me, hey, you should consider consulting. And so that was where my life took a completely different direction. But out of Western, I was pretty clear.
So what was your first job then after university?
I found my way into a job working on employee surveys because that was all the rage in the late 90s. And so I could do all the data analysis and whiz bang nerd stuff, which was great. And I was willing to do the whiz bang nerd stuff because it got me access into boardrooms because the data had to be presented always to the executive team and sometimes even to the board of directors. So I was 26 and I was getting access to these amazing places, inner sanctums of companies because I was the one who could understand and translate the employee survey data. So it was a good call. I didn't want to do it forever, but it did teach me and get me access really, really young. So that was very cool.
That does sound very cool. I really want to focus today on organizational and teams and how important that is, especially when it's branding. So when we think of marketing, we usually think of directing it to our customers. Yep. But another market, which is just as, or if not more important, in my opinion, is your employees. Very people who make your brand come alive to your customers. Why would you say marketing is so important internally?
Well, first of all, there's a direct link between what your employees understand and believe and want to fulfill as a promise and what your customer sees, right? So for the most part, although there are certainly organizations where your product speaks for itself without your employees, for the vast majority, it's your employees who actually transmit those experiences that form the scraps and straws of the brand. So that's really important. So we can think about the employees as having that link. They're the link between what we do as leaders and how we behave goes to then how employees show up, which goes to what our customers experience. So there's that indirect model. But the other thing, of course, is that they're calling 2021 the great resignation as opposed to the great recession. So many people have had an experience through the last 2 years where they're just done. They're done with their employer. They don't believe anymore. They don't think it's worth it. So the brand and the story and the promise and the personality of your organization has a lot to do with your ability to attract, develop and retain the kind of people you need to be successful. So I think we've got sort of the direct, it just as an ends in and of itself, it matters what your brand is with employees. But then in the way that employees then transmit many of the experiences that create your company for the customer, they're just as mission critical that way. So it's kind of in every way, it matters a whole lot.
Oh yeah, definitely. I read somewhere statistics that content shared by employees get 8 times more engagement than content shared by brand channels.
I love that.
Yeah. So it sort of goes a bit on what you were saying. Why do you think employees make the best brand advocates?
I think we're getting pretty savvy about being kind of sold a bill of goods because we're being sold to everywhere. You know, you can't do anything anymore. I'm trying to watch just a fun YouTube video at night and there's being bombarded with ads. It's everywhere. And it feels so inauthentic sometimes. And it just feels pushy. And we all know what they're in it for. They just want to sell us stuff. So all of a sudden, when we see something posted by a human and they have a face and they're not writing in some slick jargon, not everything rhymes or is punchy or catchy, but they're sort of authentically talking about what matters to them, what they're seeing, their experiences, that's compelling. This is really interesting because I experienced this when I worked in a consulting firm. Some things they would want to publish my ideas under the corporate banner or in some fancy white paper. And that got way less uptake and was of way less interest to people. I think they kind of put their shields up when they see that stuff. They're like, oh, here comes some consulting bump versus when, and actually I just posted something on LinkedIn today where I used my computer to take a picture that was just very unflattering and very like showing myself being very frustrated. And I put it on LinkedIn just with text, not a link, not an article, just text about, I know this is going to be controversial, but, and I put out a point saying that I think meetings shouldn't be used to make decisions. I have never had as much engagement on a LinkedIn post in my life as when it is a picture of me in a crappy t-shirt. You haven't done my hair, no makeup, nothing, just being very authentic. So I think that's the difference is we're tired. We're fatigued of all these honed, beautiful, crafted, coercive, you know, somebody telling us how to feel instead of just somebody telling us how they feel. This is my reality. This is what I feel. Does that resonate with you? And I find it much more resonant to see how a real employee feels about something as opposed to what the marketing department wants me to believe or consume.
You know, I totally agree with you. And just to elaborate on that too, I think one of the reasons employees are great brand advocates is because if they're behind the scenes and they are buying into, you know, what the brand stands behind and what the brand is all about, and they're going out and sharing it to the world as a consumer, as an audience, you're looking when like they don't just walk the walk or they don't just walk the walk, right? I mean, if you're buying it internally, when I look online, you know, you talk about LinkedIn and when I see people, employees, and they're like showing about, you know, they've got this cool mug or this great gift that they got from their employees with their logo. I'm like, I work for the best company. They just gave us this cool swag.
Exactly.
You know, swag is my business, right? So I notice that they feel appreciated. They love being there and they're sharing about their internal experience with the world. And so, and then promoting the company at the end of the day, because you're
true enthusiasm, genuine enthusiasm is infectious. Mm-hmm. Right?
Totally.
Not the false, I had to do this post because it was my daily post in our marketing month campaign and I had to push it through a thing that drops to social at the right hours of the day. That stuff, we're so overwhelmed and bombarded with that. So when you just see like, oh, look at this cool swag I got.
Yeah.
You know, we just want to feel someone's enthusiasm.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with you. Let's talk about company culture because I know that's your expertise. So what are some key elements of a strong culture?
It's interesting. I actually think that it's not the elements that matter. It's the strength that matters. I have worked with companies from a tiny group of radiologists in Toronto to Amazon leaders in Seattle. And those cultures are radically different from one another. You know, a radiologist is quite risk averse. You want that. You don't want them doing procedures that are unsafe. You don't want them, you know, being like, well, I read your mammogram. I think this is right. You know, that'll do. You want the culture of that organization to be conservative, to be like certainly innovative, but things have to be tried and true and tested before we bring them in. You know, you're Amazon, you can afford to be like, let's spend $100 million and try this and see how it goes, right? So it's not the content of the culture that great organizations have in common. In fact, I would say the more differentiated your culture can be, the better. It's the strength of it. And when I say strength, it's how visible is it? How aligned is everything you do? So is the way you hire aligned with your culture? Is the way you pay? Is the, you know, the way you do formal things in your organization? Like, is your budgeting process or do all of these things point to the same values, to the same things that matter. And if it does, culture will be an asset to you. Culture is also an asset in the sense that it tells people who doesn't belong. Some employees may, and I actually did this when I was we were talking about graduating from university. When I came out of university, I went to interview at a very, very well-known consulting firm, a big global firm. And I walked in and they gave me this visitor's badge. And the visitor's badge was very high tech. It was one piece of sticky stuff. And then you wrote your name on another sticker and they put it on top. And after a certain amount of time, the ink on the bottom one bled through and said expired in red ink. And it was a very clear connection to their culture, a very security-oriented culture and all these sorts of things. And as I'm sitting talking to the recruiter, I'm watching this ink bleed through that makes me look like an illegal alien. I just thought, like, you know what? I actually don't think I fit here. And they were saying things like, okay, well, the great thing here is that you fly out on Sundays to whatever location you're working in. But the great thing is you get to come home Thursdays and work from your home city office on Fridays. And I was like, that's the perk, is that I get to like be away from my family, but only for 4.5 days a week. And I literally took my resume and I said, thank you so much for your candor. I'm going to withdraw my application.
Oh,
and
it was kidding.
No, wow. I did. But it, you know what? It was a great conversation because it's a very strong culture. It's a very successful organization. And it was very clear to me that it's not where I wanted to be. And if I had gone in there and they had trained me and I had turned over, that would have been really costly. It would have meant interrupting client relationships. So the best thing was that their culture spoke loudly and to me said, like, warning, like, run. But to most other people says, like, wow, this is awesome. So that's to me the important thing. I don't dictate what's a great culture, what's the right values to have, what are the right things to care about or pay attention to. But I get really preachy when I see organizations that espouse a certain set of values and then everything about them says that's not actually what matters. What really matters is these other things. So to me, it's the strength of your culture, the alignment of your behaviors and your practices and everything else to those values. That's what really gets me excited. And sometimes I'm just as excited by a place that really turns me off because I'm like, well, there is a potent culture, good on them. And that's better and more interesting to me than a place where, well, they don't have much of a culture. It's kind of a vacuum.
You know, that's amazing that you did that, first of all, that you withdrew. I've never heard that before. That's great. Good for you.
It was quite something. I kept the expired badge just because it was so like shocking.
Yeah, that's wild. I haven't seen that before. The other thing too, when you were talking, is when you think about culture and, you know, you want to attract employees. So people want to attract obviously good employees. And I've had this conversation with people. You have to make sure that, you know, back to the branding thing, that you have a strong culture and that your brand is strong as well. So you're going to attract the type of employees that you want, but that are also going to want to work in that culture, right? Because I've talked to people where they want to hire the best of the best, but their culture and their brand internally sucks. Not that it's a bad company, but the way they position themselves isn't really doing them justice to attract the type of talent they want. So what do you say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like this is all that people know of you. We were talking about universities, but universities are the same. Students in high school, they come up with some sense of which universities are cool and which they want to go to on very little data. But universities have very strong brands, very, very strong brands. And so the kids know which ones feel like a fit and which ones don't. And they gather that from, you know, sure, sometimes from magazine rankings, how other kids who went to their high school talk about their alma mater, what they put on Instagram, which has the best parties, which students go on to the best graduate, like whatever. But there's no one right university. There are students that fit all these different universities, but if you aren't making it clear which kind of students are going to be super happy at your organization, you are completely missing an opportunity. So same if you're an employer. Again, I would rather be the number one choice of 10% of candidates than the number 10 choice of 100% of candidates. I think that's the opportunity that so many miss. They just try and be this vanilla we're just great on every dimension. No, BS. Nobody's great. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just terrible.
It becomes self-defeating. I always say to people, branding is a way to motivate or inspire people to fall in love with your brand.
Yeah.
So how are you doing that? Right.
And you can't fall in love with everything or every brand. Right. Yeah. So truly falling in love, we're back to the get 10% of the people having you as the number one choice. That's a way better approach than trying to compromise on so many things or even watering down your employee value proposition. It's like our comp is okay and our benefits are okay and our this is okay and everything's okay because we did everything. Instead of saying, you know what? We suck on this dimension, but that's because people who want to work here don't care that much about that one. They care a lot about this. And so we are top of the pack on that one. Even making tough trade-offs and being willing to say, some people are going to be turned off if we don't have that. There's so little of that courage in leadership anymore. Everybody just vanillas it down to the fact that it's just meh for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's such a lost opportunity.
That's so true. So let's talk a little bit more about team building. You said a quote, and I love this. You said, we've got to get away from team building exercises where we go zip lining or playing paintball. I love that because how many times, if anyone's out there listening, have they done team building where it's like, let's do paintball?
No, we got to keep it more current, right? Before the pandemic, we haven't done any team building in a while, but before the pandemic, it was all axe throwing.
Oh, yes, you're right. Sorry, axe throwing. So what's your take on team building and what are some better alternatives? And why do you disagree with those team building activities?
So I love fun activities with teams. I haven't done axe throwing yet, but I've done many of them and they're really fun. But let's be clear that if there is anything on which your team needs to get better, doing a fun exercise is not going to get you there. And if there's any trust issues or any concerns in your team, giving people knives or axes, as we see often with cooking classes and axe throwing, is a really bad idea, especially because those normally are mingled with alcohol. So,
but are you being serious or are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm being totally serious. Like, this is what happens. People will come to me and they'll say, we're really having some issues in our team, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so are always at each other's throats. And so we've decided to go to Niagara Falls and we're going to go to a vineyard and we're going to do a cooking class. I'm like, wow. Okay. So there's no trust. You're going to get them liquored up and hand them knives. Okay, good. That's interesting. And that's like every word of the truth. I have done that multiple times. I have a collection of aprons from the cooking schools in Niagara Falls that I've gone to with teams. So now I just say, okay, if your team is healthy, great. Go have fun. Go have shared experience. Those kinds of activities are really fun for creating shared language and inside jokes. I think in 2021, it's becoming harder and harder and harder to choose good activities though, because you know we have situations where people have physical limitations that they can't participate in axe throwing the way everyone else can. We have situations with diversity on teams where people don't feel safe, where there are power differentials that mean that a lot of these activities are really uncomfortable for people. And the other thing is that some people on your team may be in a situation where they can't be away overnight. They have people that they care for that they don't have backup. So I think a lot of those team building activities are starting to be a nice to have that is just not something you should count on your team for a lot of different reasons. What we do need is we need ways to help teams that are in some trouble, are struggling with trust issues. And to me, that's not avoiding the issue by, you know, going zip lining. It's actually finding somebody who knows what they're doing to help your team talk through those issues. And the vast majority of times when things present as trust issues on your team, my experience is that they actually all stem from misalignment, that you haven't done enough to make clear whose role is whose, who owns what decisions, what your priorities are, how those priorities mash up with one another. So a lot of trust issues on teams can be fixed by doing a better job of getting back to what are we here to do? What's our purpose as a team? What are our shared priorities? Those sorts of issues. That's why I didn't like team building even before I understood some of the uncomfortable dynamics it can create because of people who have diverse experiences in life. And now I like it even less. There's just too many pitfalls in some of those things. If you are going to try and have casual time together, try wherever you can to make it during the workday so people already have arrangements and it's part of their routine to be away from their families. Try to avoid physical things that are going to make people feel embarrassed or feel that they're not, you know, as vigorous or whatever else as some people on the team. That stuff can just get really unhealthy really quickly.
I love that, especially what you said about doing it on work time and not on free time, because we all have such limited free time. And how many times have someone said, oh, I got to go do this team building thing on Saturday afternoon when, you know, I got to get my kids taken care of or whatever.
Right.
So I love that. So what would be some alternatives then that you would recommend?
Well, so one of the ones that is replacing some of the frivolous things is, can we do some kind of a community project together? So if we could take one work day and we could go clean up a park. So first of all, if it's during the day, and cleaning up a park for most people, for most teams, should be physically within people's limits and should be no problem. So, you know, can we do something, give something back? Can we go learn something together? Is there an event we could go to? Could we go get some new information? Those sorts of things. And then if there actually is an issue on the team, I highly recommend, can we bring someone in to help us talk through these issues? Can we use some kind of a style tool to understand our different personalities and how we come at issues differently and get more awareness and empathy about that? So there's lots that you can do. And there are so many people out there who do that kind of work, but substantive work, not just frivolous. Most of us just don't have time for frivolous anymore. And it's certainly not going to fix some underlying trust issue.
That's interesting. So let's talk about toxic teams, because, you know, we're sort of talking about teams and you're saying it's okay to do the team building, quote unquote, no one can see me, but it's healthy, but not when there's issues and when it's toxic. So what makes a team toxic? And then what are some tips that you can offer to make them healthier?
There are a variety of different ways. So in my book, You First, I actually go through a series of different toxic teams. So I talk about a team I call the crisis junkies. And that's a team usually with weak leadership. And so they aren't aligned on what matters. They start to have silos and infighting, and it's just not pleasant. And the crisis junkie part of the title is that they kind of get nothing done until there's some giant emergency. And then in the emergency, it's like, okay, well, now it's an emergency. So everybody kind of tucks into their role and resources become unlimited and all that sort of thing. So it kind of forces alignment as opposed to having achieved alignment because you actually worked for it. There's a team I call the Royal Rumble team, which is usually when IQ is higher than EQ. So smart people who just want to convince other people of how great their idea is. So that's really an issue around the team dynamic. There's not a lot of trust or confidence in one another, that sort of thing. Lots of passive aggressive teams. That's very common. I call them the bleeding back team because somebody walks away and you can see all the knives. And so there's a wide variety. I think the interesting thing now is some of what makes teams toxic, that's not toxic like a noxious gas that's going to kill you, but that's toxic kind of like the BPA that was in our water bottles killing us slowly. And that's really teams where I call them the bobbleheads. So it kind of looks like bobblehead dolls. Everybody just is constantly like, oh yeah, It's all agreement. They don't realize that they're leaving so much risk inherent in things. And then I also talk about the spectator team where everybody's kind of eating popcorn while the boss has a series of one-on-one meetings and there's no actual teamwork. So in You First, I go through all these different types of toxic teams, and it's usually a breakdown of either alignment or of trust. And one of those two things is what goes wrong, and sometimes both. So the thing is to always start by working on alignment. What are we here to do? What is the business counting on us to do? How is the world changing? And how does that change require us to show up differently or pay attention to different things or add different value or any of that kind of stuff? So focusing on your alignment first and what we have to do differently is the best approach, because if you go straight into like, so we don't trust each other, right? Like people are just going to clam up and they're going to, you know, be very uncomfortable. Or then somebody's going to like launch a grenade into the conversation. That's going to be like, oh man, how do we recover from this? So always start with improving the alignment, getting clear on what you're there to do as a team. And slowly you'll be able to get at some of the issues that have eroded trust.
So you talk about trust. I mean, how many times have you been in a meeting, or has anyone out there listening been in a meeting where they sit there and they listen? And like you said, they're the bobbleheads and they.
Yeah.
And then the meeting's over and then the leader says, okay, any questions? Thoughts, any feedback? and nobody is like,
it's so painful.
And so, right. And you, and that happens more times than not, I suspect.
Oh, yeah.
What I think about that, I think you talked about trust, is feeling that you're in a place or an environment or your team environment where you feel safe, where you feel that you're actually going to be heard and valued, and what you're going to say is going to be taken to heart and not just blown off.
Yeah. So one of the exercises that we do with teams is to help every single person around the room understand what's unique about their role and their contribution. We actually go around the table and have people say, okay, what's the unique value you bring and your role brings? And then the second question we ask is, okay, and what stakeholders are you thinking about and advocating for more so than anybody else at the table? And because of that, what tensions are you obligated to put on the deliberations? And when you go through this exercise, you'll realize that everyone at the table has something unique that they're bringing to the conversation. And once they understand that nobody can look at this issue with the same lens as you, then all of a sudden it's not, does anyone have any questions? It's, hey, Jolie, okay, you're looking at this from the perspective of somebody creating the promotional materials. How are you thinking differently about it? I love this campaign. And you may be like, well, you know, it's okay, but A, it's way too many words. It's not going to pop on any swag. Or B, it's fine, but it doesn't translate to Spanish well. And we have like 2/3 of the people we need to get this to, it needs to be in Spanish. Once everyone understands what their unique contribution is around the table, there's a lot less silence, because it's actually, okay, I get that if I don't share how this comes across from my perspective, nobody's going to know that. And then if nobody says anything, the person standing at the front of the room can actually invite the feedback. Hey, you're thinking about this from our procurement perspective. What aren't we thinking about if we're trying to procure this? What are some of the supply chain issues right now? That's a great example, right? Okay, supply chains have like gone to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. Which are the things that we can get right now? What can't we get? What should we stay away from? A, know everyone's unique value around the table. B, hold yourself accountable for adding that value. And C, if people don't, then invite them into the conversation with specific comment to why you need their unique lens on the issue. You'll get a lot further than just any questions.
That is brilliant. I love that. That is great advice. And I hope anybody out there who's listening, especially any leaders, that is amazing advice. I love it. So let's talk about COVID, because there's obviously COVID has impacted culture and especially teams and
everything.
But, you know, keeping teams connected, right? So how would you say COVID has directly impacted team culture?
It's interesting. We just have some brand new data. So Microsoft has been analyzing all of its metadata from communications between its own employees. And it's really, really valuable because it allows us to see what's going on. And it looks like through the pandemic, teams themselves, the trust levels on teams, the interaction, the cohesiveness on teams has held pretty well. So intact teams seem to be doing pretty well through this. People are engaging with one another. They're trying to take care of one another. It's been pretty good. What's really suffered is the inter-team communication. So people that you would bump into in the cafeteria who you didn't necessarily have a meeting with, but it's nice to hear what they're working on, the collisions at the photocopier, those sorts of things are what's disappearing. What one of my clients referred to as, I want to have the conversations I don't want to have. And what he meant by that is, you know, if I want to talk to somebody, I can still set up a Zoom and talk to them. But what's interesting in an office is all the conversations you have that you weren't planning to have or you didn't need to have or whatever else. And he said, that's what I really miss. I want to talk to the people I didn't know I wanted to talk to.
Well, the spontaneous conversation.
Yeah. Right? And so the Microsoft data seem to be reinforcing that. So I'm really worried about how do those cross-department conversations support the effective operation of an organization? How do they affect innovation and that sort of thing? So those are the long-term costs that I think we don't yet know how big those costs have been. And we need to find mechanisms to have people still interacting and colliding with people in different teams, even if we're going to stay, you know, lots of people are going to stay virtual after this. So we need some new ways of operating.
So do you have any advice or any tips that you could recommend?
The best tip I have is that don't do a hybrid meeting. So the worst of the worst is to have a bunch of people together in a room and they have the video conferencing on, and then a bunch of people sitting at their desks at home who are each a square. So you've got like six squares that are people at home, and then you've got one square that's six people crammed in. You kind of can't see one of the people. The sound is terrible. Then all of a sudden they're whispering to each other and you don't know what they're whispering about. So what we've been doing in situations like that is we've been saying, okay, you can have the speakerphone on in the room and then turn off the audio on your computer, but everybody looks into a laptop. And so that way, every single person is a square in the call, and you can't have their computer audio on, or the feedback is truly painful. But if you turn off their computer audio, let them talk with a speakerphone, but present and show up visually in the box, it's way, 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 way better. So that's a tip that anybody can.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, it works really well.
But ideally, would you recommend not doing the hive? So when teams get together, let's say, you know, you have a team meeting once a month or once a week or whatever, are you suggesting that it's better to do it in person?
Depends on what the meeting's about. So if it's a meeting that's about, that needs rich communication, so it's complex, it's information that could be equivocal, some people could interpret it in different ways, there's high emotional content, it's ambiguous or a place we haven't gone before, yes, use your one day in the office the month to have that meeting. If it's a team meeting where you're actually working on a plan, a rollout plan, an implementation plan, you're opening a new store, and no, the data now say the best thing to do there is to have everyone jump on collaboration software, share the screen so that everybody's looking at the Gantt chart with all the pieces. This is when we, whatever, put the thing in the newspaper, and this is the flyer, and this is when we put out the balloons, so that everybody's looking at the same screen, but turn the video off. For that kind of a meeting, no, use one of your, you know, one of your days when everybody's remote for that. So it's really about making your communication fit for purpose. The in-person meeting days are going to be the most precious time. So we only want to put the most valuable content in those.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love that. What's your take on Zoom in the sense that for a company, so for myself, for example, I work for a national company and we have offices all over Canada, right? Because of COVID, we started doing monthly meetings. Sometimes we do them a bit more and where everybody gets on, and sometimes we break it into smaller teams. And, stuff. And I've been with the company 20 years and I have not seen everybody as much, believe it or not, during COVID than before COVID. Because before COVID, we used to have a big national sales meeting once a year where everybody would get together and then there'd be something else. So maybe we'd see each other twice a year, everybody. And now it's more regular. So in that sense, it's almost created more connection.
Yeah, I love it.
So
I love it.
Your point.
I'm a big fan. I'm really a big fan. I have noticed that using breakouts is really valuable. There are just people, if there's 30 people on the call, who just aren't going to say anything. But if you have a quick 10 minutes in the meeting when you put it down to groups of four, it's really hard for anybody not to chime in if it's a group of four. So, you know, it gives you the functionality. And as somebody who used to facilitate large meetings, used to be you decide you needed a breakout. You wanted to create a more intimate conversation where everybody's participating. Well, that meant, first of all, you had to have the space. So it was expensive. And then you had to have the time, which was because just to get them to the breakout room. And then you'd say the breakout is over and they'd stop and they'd get an extra coffee and somebody would be like, I'm just going to check my messages. Oh, I have a message from the office. I'm going to call in. When you're doing it on Zoom, you press a button and everybody goes, and then there they are back in your meeting. It's very efficient. So, you know, we're certainly going to keep using Zoom for lots of things and then really using that in-person face-to-face time for just the most precious things that need really rich conversation.
Mm-hmm. What about, you hear people that say they're all zoomed out and like not on a Zoom call, and how do you avoid, I guess, burnout?
Yeah, I would limit the number of hours a day. We know that the video processing body language over video does seem to tax people more so than it does doing it in person. So the data, the research on it is that you only need about 10 or 15 minutes off of a Zoom call to go back to pre-level. So I would say have as a default that no meeting is longer than 45 minutes. So just make sure there's 15 minutes between any call. So everybody gets that natural time for their eyes to rest, time for their brain to rest. I would limit the number of Zooms in any given day. What people don't want is to start at 8 a.m. and go to 5 p.m. of staring at the screen all day. That's just, it's hard on your butt. It's just bad. So I absolutely love this functionality of all these collaboration tools, but understand that we still need time for people to do their own production, their own work. And that should be at least 50% of the day for most people. So if all of a sudden Zoom's taking, I think we're zoomed out A, because we're trying to Zoom all day, every day, and B, because we're just having the same craptacular meetings we had in person, but on Zoom, and they just feel more painful. So make sure it's a meeting that is something where we actually need to add value. We need the outcome to be something different than what came into the meeting. If you have good meetings, and if you have a relatively few number of them in a day or in a week, I think people will be able to do this for the long haul.
Great advice. I love that. And I agree with you. I actually really like Zoom meetings. Now I do them more than phone calls because I find that you can connect with someone when you can see them, you know, and I really like that. So just like we're doing right now, people can't tell, but we're on Zoom.
Yeah. And actually it's funny because I've done a couple podcasts where there hasn't been video and it does feel so different.
Yeah.
So I think your listeners can probably feel that we have video on, that we're connecting, like feels like we're making eye contact. They can probably sense that in the conversation, even though they can't see it. So there's big benefits.
Oh, I totally agree. Okay. So I know you have to go here, but I'm really curious about this. I've heard you say your mantra is get comfortable getting uncomfortable. And I love that because I'm all about getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I just have learned that all of the most important things in life are on the other side of discomfort. So one of the articles I wrote recently that has had a lot of traction is I wrote an article about psychological safety. And we keep hearing this line about psychological safety and people need psychological safety in the workplace or else they won't speak up and they won't contribute. And the whole conversation seems to be about why bosses and organizations need to make people safe. And while that's one piece of the picture, I think it completely misses how much we have to take ownership of our own perceptions of psychological safety. And if you're telling yourself a story that, well, I'm not going to say this because they may not like my idea, or they may not like me if I say that. So much of this is not about us being in danger, if you think about the word safety, but just the thought of us being in discomfort. Yeah, they may criticize your work. Would that be unsafe? Nope. Would it be uncomfortable? Yep. And so really getting to the point where we can understand that if we're willing to be uncomfortable, you know, we get to the other side of conflict, we learn how to advocate for ourselves, you know, just so many good things lie on the other side of discomfort. And once you just go, oh, okay, this is going to be uncomfortable, and you keep going, then nothing scares you anymore. It's amazing. And then you find your relationships get stronger because people like people who are willing to be uncomfortable to make things better, and you get to a better place. So it's something you have to just have as a mantra. Like, it's really my mantra. It's like, ooh, that'll be uncomfortable. Yep.
And you're going to do it anyway. And I love that. I'm very much the same way. You know, read somewhere that you should try to do something, step outside your comfort zone once a day. And I try, you know, and I just think it does. It makes you feel alive and it makes you feel like you're accomplishing things. And I think it builds character and confidence at the same time. So I love that mantra. Thank you for sharing that with me. Wow. I can't believe the time has gone by.
Too much fun having
time. I know, Leanne, it's been so great talking to you. So if people want to learn more about you and about 3Co's, what's the best way for them to connect with you? Are you?
Yeah, probably just leannedavey.com. LinkedIn is kind of where I hang out. You'll find me having deep discussions on LinkedIn. So come find me there for sure. And leannedavey.com. So Leanne is Liane and Davey is Davey.
So, I know a lot of Leannes and you're the first one that spells it that way. So
yeah, I was like 16 before I met another one, but now one of my partners in business is Leanne the same way. So
you're kidding.
They apparently it's French.
It's
French.
Français.
It sounds so much better that way.
Thank you again so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to be connecting with you on LinkedIn. So we'll chat again soon.
We'll have deep discussions about branding.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, Leanne. Take care.
Thanks so much, Julie. Bye.
Okay, bye.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe learned a few things to help you with your branding. But most of all, I hope you had some fun. This show is a work in progress, so please remember to rate and review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts. And if you want to learn more about me and what I do to help my clients with their branding, feel free to reach out to me on any of the social channels under, you guessed it, Branding Badass. Branding Matters was produced, edited, and hosted by Jolie Goodson, also me. So thanks again, and until next time, here's to all you badasses out there.